What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points. I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the KS Supers family. Today, coming to you live post-game after the Minnesota Timberwolves beat the Utah Jazz. They are now 2-0 on the season. The game finished 116-111, and yeah, as I said, 2-0, good start for the Wolves. To break all of it down, we're going to go through the goods and the bads as usual after a game. To do all that with me is Tanner Hoopers contributor Jack Borman. What's going on, Jack?
I'm great, man. I'm going to be even better if the Wolves can keep turning in performances like they did tonight.
Yeah, it makes it pretty easy to do a podcast straight after it when it's a good win like tonight, and even more encouraging, obviously, than game one with Utah being a better team. And I think the performance in general was just better all around. So a really good night. Like I did last time after the Pistons game, we're going to do the bad things first, the things we didn't like from the game, get those out of the way, and then we'll finish on a high note and finish with the good stuff. Jack, I'll throw it to you first. What was the first thing that you kind of saw that you didn't like out there tonight?
What I really did not like was I thought Ricky Rubio played really poorly in the third quarter. So the Wolves were up. 83-68 with 3:11 left in the third quarter, and then Ricky Rubio just started jacking up a ton of shots. He took a really dumb pull up mid range shot, and then from there
there was a step back three as well that he shot in that.
Yep, and then he also took a really ill advised layup in transition where he was off balance. I think he thought he was going to get fouled, but he didn't. And then obviously there was that outlet pass, and then in the fourth quarter where, you know, it was a very un Ricky Rubio like decision there that could have led to a wide open three in the corner from Bogdanovich that thankfully didn't go in, but that would have made it, I think that would have made it like a 3-point game or a 4-point game after it being a 6-point game. Which could have been just completely disastrous. It would have made it a 6-point game, with about 9 minutes left, which would have been terrifying, I think, if you were a Wolves fan. So I was just really disappointed with Ricky Rubio on the third quarter, but thought that he made up for it in the fourth quarter with some really phenomenal defense, that I think kind of saved his game.
Yeah, I tweeted out at one point, I think it was probably during that bad run from Ricky, that we were getting the full Rubio experience in that game. I think at times he was, you know, his shot selection was poor, and obviously the shot making, which has always been a problem for him. And then other times the intangibles were just so clear to see. Like he tracks down ball, you know, loose balls, rebounds. He had that really good hockey assist in the first quarter or the second quarter where he made the bounce pass in transition, and then Russell hit the corner shooter after making the catch. And it was just, yeah, at times you have to take the good with the bad with Ricky, but when the bad just piles on more bad in the, like that third quarter, it gets really hard to watch. And I was pretty encouraged with Ryan Saunders who hooked him pretty quickly after that kind of bad spell. And I didn't expect Ryan to do that just because he has that good relationship with Ricky and he obviously trusts him so much. But it was pretty tough watching. And I think of all players, Rubio kind of looks the rustiest at the moment.
Yeah, which is surprising. And I'm glad that they're kind of letting him play through it. But at the same time, I think that they really got to consider giving Jarrett Culver a little more run over Ricky Rubio. Maybe not necessarily to close the game. I think tonight would have been an instance where I completely understood closing with Jarrett Culver over Ricky Rubio, just because I think you could put Culver on Donovan Mitchell, which would allow you to then put Josh Okogie on a bigger guy like a Bogdanovich, or even stick him on Conley. But I think D'Lo on Conley would have been fine just because I think the length bothers Conley. But I just think that there's going to come a point in time where I think you start to consider whether or not Ricky Rubio is the guy you want to close with. But on the bright side tonight from Rubio, you know, he did have 6 assists and only 1 turnover. which is great. And if he can continue to take care of the ball like he did tonight, I think that there's no reason that he's not going to get like the 27 minutes that he got tonight.
Yeah, well, I think we discussed it, you know, at length after the trade, but I think it kind of all boils down to the simple fact of how well is Rubio shooting in terms of the end of the game stuff that you were just talking about, like, especially when they're running wedge action into Towns post-ups over and over. Obviously, there's going to be doubles that come at Towns, and there need to be shooters around him. And if Rubio is hitting 32% of his threes, then it becomes a little bit more untenable to have him out on the floor at the end of crunch time games, especially when you have a ball handler like D'Angelo Russell who can clearly take the lion's share of ball handling responsibilities. And then if you have a guy like Jarrett Culver, like you were saying, who hit all three of his threes tonight, you know, maybe he's the guy you want spotted up in the corner rather than Ricky. And not to mention the stuff that you said about the point of attack defense and the ability to throw multiple defenders out there with him and Josh on the floor. But yeah, I think Ricky is one of the guys I'm not as worried about just in terms of general play and, you know, what he can do to impact the team, because we've seen what he can do over a number of years on a number of different teams. But right now it's not the prettiest Ricky that we've ever seen.
Yeah, and like you said, with Culver spotting up in the corner, I mean, tonight when he spotted up in the corner, he was 2 for 2 from three right in front of the Wolves bench, hit the same shot, didn't hit the rim on two possessions in a row, which was just fantastic.
And then the third one was out of a Towns post-up where, you know, as soon as that double came, Towns kicked it out to him.
It was a triple team that came at Cat because he flashed across the middle of the paint onto the strong side of the floor, and he got the ball, kicked it to, or was going to kick it to, I think it was Malik in the corner at that point. And then Jarrett was just wide open. There wasn't anybody within like 6 feet of him from the left pocket there, and just was draining it. And so, I guess kind of this takes me into the next point that I have is that, you know, the Wolves have gotten 0 points still through two games from their power forward spot. From Lehman and Wancho, and they played a combined 19 minutes tonight. Lehman only played 14 minutes, did not attempt a shot. Wancho played 5 minutes, and only took one shot. And you know, I'm surprised that Wancho is seemingly out of the rotation this early, but I mean, there's just no reason to play him you know, if he's going to continue to not even really battle on the boards, not hit shots, and just fall asleep on defense. I don't understand the need. Like, I don't think there's a need to play him. I understand that you paid him $7 million and you don't want that to be a bad look, or $7 million a year. But at the same time, if the Wolves are going to make a trade, I don't think it's hard to get off a $7 million contract or send, you know, Wancho and a couple second round picks to, you know, to a team that's looking to take on a contract.
Once he's eligible to be traded. Yeah, if it's a team like Houston, obviously PJ Tucker is the guy that the name gets thrown around a lot, and that's only going to happen when Harden gets traded, right? And you know, the sky's falling there, and once the fire sale starts, I doubt that they care about taking on 2 years at $7 million and then a team option that they can just decline. Like, that's what bad teams do. That's what rebuilding teams do. They take on bad contracts so they can, you know, facilitate trades because then they know they're not going to compete straight away. So I agree. I don't think, when March 3rd comes and passes, that he will be a complete, you know, anchor on the team and a guy you can't move off from at all. But I'm super surprised as well that he's already out of the rotation, and that's not because he deserves to be in it the way he's playing. Like, he's been awful, but more just that we all expected, I guess, Ryan Saunders to kind of be a little bit of a Gerson Rosas puppet in that sense, where, you know, Rosas is the one who gave him the money, and he probably wants to see him thrive and see him play more minutes and justify that investment. But Saunders seems to have kind of just taken charge there and said, look, we're trying to win games, and Wancho Hernangómez isn't helping us win games at the moment, and we're going super duper small, and Josh Okogie is going to be our four, and Anthony Edwards, you know, I saw you tweet earlier, Anthony Edwards played all of his minutes, or practically all of his minutes at that time, as a four. So if you're playing wings at four, all of a sudden, you know, Juancho becomes a little bit redundant, and so does Lehman to a sense, because if, you know, you start the game, if you're playing, it's a bit different tonight, because Lehman did start guarding Bogdanović and Okogie's guarding Mitchell, but they clearly want to play four wing, you know, three wings, a point guard and a center, and Lehman and Juancho kind of aren't that. They're almost more power forwards exclusively at this point.
Yeah, and so like you alluded to, I have Anthony Edwards playing. So how many minutes? Anthony Edwards played 22 minutes, and I have him playing power forward. Just in terms of who he was guarding, Anthony Edwards played power forward for all but 3 minutes and 15 seconds. So about 18 and a half minutes, Anthony Edwards played power forward tonight. He had 18 points on 8 of 12 shooting, and he was a plus 6, and he had 2 steals. So I think that Saunders was really experimenting there. We saw lineups that had Anthony Edwards at the four and Jarrett Culver at the three. We had a lineup that also had Anthony Edwards at the four with Josh Okogie at the three, which I thought was interesting. And I think we could end up getting a lineup at some point that features, you know, Rubio at the one, Culver at the two, Okogie at the three, and Edwards at the four. Which I think would be a really interesting defensive lineup, and just a lineup that if you need energy, you could turn to. So yeah, I think, like you said, you know, we could see Okogie and Edwards be the two that are playing the power forward minutes. Just considering the fact that the Wolves pretty much always have two of Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, and Ricky Rubio on the floor at all times. So there was only 3 minutes and 15 seconds tonight, that exact same 3 minutes and 15 seconds that Edwards played the three instead of the four. That was the only, you know, 3 minutes and 15 seconds of the game where the Timberwolves did not have two of D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, and Ricky Rubio on the floor, which is significant. And if those guys are holding their own and playing well in the backcourt, I think that just kind of naturally lends itself to playing, you know, two of Okogie, Culver, and Edwards with one of those guys playing the four. And I think it's obviously going to be Josh and Anthony. So that's just going to be an interesting storyline to follow, especially tomorrow. With the Lakers.
Yeah, and the other option there is Jarrett Culver, who hasn't featured there as much, but going off your spreadsheet, which, again, I'll mention at every show that if you're listening, you haven't checked out Jack's spreadsheets during the game, it's pretty much all the lineups, you know, the how long they played together, the plus minus for that lineup. It's a very good tool, and I have it open throughout every game, and it's really handy, and especially when we're talking now. But Culver played, so in the first half, he played 3.5 minutes at the four to end the half. They were plus 7 in that 3.5 minutes. And then he played like 4 seconds or something in the second half. And obviously they were dead even there, zero. But like the versatility that Saunders has is there. Like that's just a 3 minute spell. Jarrett Culver plays the four instead of the three, or instead of the two. He's on the court with Beasley, Russell, and Rubio for both of those. So really small, they win those minutes. There's just a lot of options that Saunders can throw out there in terms of wings playing the four. And right now, it just kind of seems like, to bring it back to the original point, that Juancho and Lehman are on the outs, kind of.
Yeah, you know, I think it obviously makes more sense to keep Lehman just because of his contract, and I also just...
Yeah.
Trust him a lot more because he's been in the system for longer. And I think, you know, Juancho, we only saw a 20 game sample size of him playing really well. And you know, I think there's got to be a shorter leash, on him than Lehman for sure.
Yeah. And that kind of, weaves into my first negative, note that I had, and that was the rebounding. They lost the rebounding battle 75-52, which is just a massive, you know, discrepancy there. They really lost a lot of juice on the boards when Towns wasn't out there. Lehman and Wancho, as we've just discussed, don't really provide any rebounding threat. They had one between them in the, in those 18-19 minutes that they played, which is just not good enough. And then Nas fights, but he really doesn't have the strength to out-muscle guys, and he's pretty easily pushed out the way. I think there was a stretch maybe there in the second or the third quarter where Nas was playing as the five, and they just could not get a defensive rebound. And especially for a team that naturally struggles on defense, I know they were really good tonight, but in general they struggle on defense. When you do get a stop, you have to be able to secure, you know, to finish that defensive possession with a rebound. When they don't, it's so deflating. You can see their heads drop a little bit. It's hard to be a good defensive team if you give up a lot of offensive rebounds. And I think that, on another night, that might have cost them. Utah had, let me just check here, 20 offensive rebounds for the night. So that's, 20 extra chances to score. And I don't have the second chance points in front of me, but that's not good enough for a team that, like I said, struggles defensively and needs to finish every defensive possession. When you do get someone to miss, you really need to steward the board and cap off that defensive play.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that, the fact that the Wolves only had 28 defensive rebounds and the Nuggets had, or excuse me, the Jazz had 20 offensive rebounds is pretty crazy to me. I just think that, there needs to be more gang rebounding from the Timberwolves. I think that probably half of those rebounds were guys, rebounding their little putback attempt for a second, third, or fourth time. But at the same time, I think there's plenty of times where guys get caught ball watching instead of tracking down the ball. And I think that's something that the Timberwolves are really going to have to address if they want to continue to win games. And the reality of the situation is that you can't shoot 13 of 29 from three and, in every single game. And you can't use that to offset, you can't rely on your three-point shooting to offset being a terrible rebounding team. And the Wolves have good rebounding guards in Beasley and Okogie, and those guys need to show up every night. And if those guys can keep showing up, I think this Wolves team is going to be just fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. Is that the rebounding from the wing is fine. I think Malik Beasley works really hard as a rebounder. Had a few big ones, late in the game. Okogie will always battle for every scrap, that's left out there on the court. But at the end of the day, I think you need bigs that rebound. Okogie can get his six, and Beasley can get his six, but you need another guy who can get eight plus nightly.
Yeah, and if those two guys, if Beasley and Okogie can match or out rebound Cat in every game this year, I think that's going to be a big time development moving forward.
Yeah. So did you have one more bad thing? I've got one more I want to touch on, but it's not overly big. And that was, I don't want to harp on it because I don't like to do it too much, but the refereeing was awful tonight. I don't think that would have been the reason that they lost. I don't think that it's something to harp on and to dwell on too much, but the cat injury, which we're hoping obviously came back on, but we're hoping that doesn't linger at all. I think that's the glaring no call, where he was clearly thrown to the ground by Gobert. But the ticky-tack fouls that only got called on one end was kind of a pretty big part of why Utah were in the bonus for virtually the entire second half. And this is probably me just venting my frustration more than making it a negative note, but I thought that it was a pretty tough game to watch at times with the ticky-tack fouls and the free throws consistently throughout the whole second half.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the one last negative thing that I had there was I didn't think Cat was aggressive enough whatsoever on offense tonight.
Yeah,
he had 19 shots, which objectively is good. But to start the game, Malik Beasley had 6 field goal attempts, and Cat hadn't even had 6 touches at that point on offense. Halfway through the first quarter, which I think is pretty egregious. And the other thing too is in the second quarter, Gobert was out there playing with 3 fouls, and there was one play where Cat just put the ball in the deck, put his head into Gobert's chest, and went right around him because Gobert couldn't foul him because he had three fouls.
Yeah.
And then on the next trip down, Kat decides to instead take a step back three. And I'm okay with a step back three if you're feeling it and it's a heat check because he's the best shooting big man of all time. But at the same time, he's got to be more aggressive in putting the ball in the deck and getting the basket, because if he gets doubled or tripled on the drive, I'm fully confident in him to kick out to an open shooter and make the right decision. And ultimately, I did think Kat made the right decision almost every time he had the ball in his hands. But I just like to see him be more aggressive, because the more aggressive he is, I think the more in rhythm he's going to get. And, you know, if that's able to happen, then this team is going to be pretty scary. Also, side note, Robert Covington just won the game for the Blazers with a big steal from Harden there at the end. But I know, we miss him. So for me, I just think the Cat needs to be more aggressive in going to the basket if his 3-point shot's not falling, especially if his matchup is in foul trouble, because he has the ability to put any big defender he faces in jail with foul trouble all night long. So
yeah, I think that's a brilliant point, because I think I was kind of surprised when I looked at it and saw that he ended up with 19 field goal attempts, because I didn't think he was aggressive enough at all. And I think there's still I wouldn't call it a problem, but real teething issues in terms of sorting out the hierarchy throughout the game. In the fourth quarter, it's sorted out, because everyone knows that Kat and D'Lo are the guys who are going to win you the game. And they're going to be the guys with the ball in their hands, and especially Kat when the game's on the line. But throughout the game, the start of the game, like you mentioned, Beasley just doing too much. I think it must be a directive from the coaching staff to try and get him going early and to try and get him open looks. So they're running sets for him. They're running handoff plays. They're running pistol action for him. And he's more than willing to take every shot he's given and jack it up, which I think is a separate issue. But I think you've got to get Towns going early as well, and you've got to get Russell going early. And Towns is one of those guys where when he starts to, you know, when it is the second quarter and he's only taken two shots, he's prone to shooting bad shots, like the step back three, like you mentioned, the kind of hook shots where he's got two on him. I know that he does make them really, and he's gotten so much better at making really good passes out of the post and feeding shooters, the offense does look so nice with shooters around him for that. But I think that you've got to get Towns going early. You've got to feed the beast. You've got to keep him happy. And then maybe that 6 of 19 is 12 of 19 instead, and he has a little bit of a better game, because I don't think Towns having one shot in the first quarter is good enough. And I don't think that that's what the coaching staff would be planning for.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, just moving forward, I think if they can draw upon the good parts of what happened tonight, and especially if you're not getting a great game out of Kat, I think that's going to be super key.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough complaining. Let's get on to the good stuff.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Garrett Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
I'll start. I think that Kat's, well, since we're on Kat, I think the Kat's defense was, again, very good tonight. Not good for Kat, good in general. His positioning, his timing on when to jump and when not to for blocks. You know, the discipline in that aspect and the discipline in all aspects was at a level that we've rarely seen from him. And he's anchoring that defense right now. And they've had pretty you know, two pretty damn good nights. And tonight, for until kind of the last quarter when Jordan Clarkson started hitting, you know, whatever he threw up, and Donovan Mitchell actually started doing Donovan Mitchell things, that was some of the best defense you've seen from Minnesota for quite a long time. And I think Kat was at the center of that. The help side blocks are obviously fun, but it's the every play things, the positioning, the pick and roll. There was multiple times where he got a hand in there on a pick and roll pass, or he just showed at the ball handler and then got back to Gobert on the roll. I think Gobert was frustrated out. So, you know, if he doesn't get those couple of putbacks, you know, towards the end of the game, those putback dunks, I think Gobert's having one of his worst nights ever. Like, Towns was in Gobert's head, and that's not because he was raining threes on him. It's because he was frustrating him defensively. He drew that charge on him when Gobert faced up, which was one of the ugliest face-up attempts I've ever seen. But Kat, like, this is not what we're used to from Kat, and I know that we've seen it before, and we've seen five-game stretches of good defense, and we've never seen, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5-month-long stretches of good defense, so I want to see that before I completely blow my top off with how good Towns is right now. But he's been awesome. 96.9 defensive rating tonight. Second straight game under 100. He's usually around 110 to 115 for a season. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say. I spoke about in the last post-game pod. I just think that Kat was awesome tonight defensively, and that's why he was allowed to shoot 6 of 19 from the field and still walk away thinking that he had a pretty damn good game.
Yeah, I think so too. And if Kat's not able to get the shot going, I still think he had a monstrous impact on this game.
Right.
And I think that's going to be crucial moving forward, because if he can prove to himself, you know, I'm such a damn good player that I can get my stuff going, Even if I'm not shooting it well, I think that's going to be a huge thing for him to draw upon. And I had written down here, you know, as one of my good things was Kat's decision making. Yeah, he had only 3 assists and 2 turnovers, but I'd love to see how many potential assists he had tonight. I thought he made some terrific decisions with the ball when he got doubled in the post. I know that there was one where he's on the right block, backing down Gobert, and he kind of looked at Ricky and navigated and told him to just go through the lane, and then threw a bullet skip pass to Malik Beasley in the opposite corner for a three that kind of helped get things going offensively. And if he can do that and he feels comfortable enough to just direct traffic and make passes like that, kind of like Jokic does, and not feeling the need to put the ball up and shoot it or force it, I think that's going to be big, especially if we get, you know, Jarrett Culver and Anthony Edwards and Josh Okogie shooting like they've shot the ball so far this year.
Yeah, when you start talking about it, that's exactly the same play that popped into my mind. And I think that Malik Beasley probably owes Karl-Anthony Towns a couple of dinners from these first few games, because Beasley's coming out the gates really cold. And I don't know how many times we're going to see it this season, but I think it'll be a lot where a kind of slow Beasley start gets turned around by a cat pass out of a double team, out of the post. Because when Beasley's in them corners and wide open and can catch and shoot without having to do too much or to come around a screen and pull up, he's uber efficient. And that pass, that play that you were talking about, that's exactly what you want to see from Towns when the defense collapses on him. And it's not like early in his career where he would panic and he would try and, you know, do a little bit too much in those situations. He just calmly stepped through, worked his way into the middle, fired it to Beasley, and, you know, 3 points. So I think it's a good point. Kat's decision-making, not just defensively, but offensively as well, it was really good. 7 assists in the first game, 3 in this game. I think you can probably expect him to average around 5 assists, and that's with guys like, you know, Russell and Rubio on the floor with him, who are noted assist guys. So I just think Towns has been brilliant to start the season, and it's one of the reasons why this team's 2-0 without him having a monster game.
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that you know, that he's able to recover from shooting just, what did he start, 1 of 6?
Yeah.
The fact that he's able to come bounce back from that and finish shooting, what is it then, 6 of 7? or no, 6 of 11 from the floor, I think is just incredible for him. And his energy and effort level is there. And, you know, the fact that he's a team high plus 13, like, I think that checks out with just a lot of the different energy plays he made. I think he had a couple of leak out layups in transition in the second half that really helped, you know, keep the Jazz at bay. Which is just so crucial. I mean, it doesn't really seem like a huge thing looking back at it necessarily, but in the moment, those are plays that help kind of define the game.
Yeah, and 110 offensive rating as well. I mentioned his defensive rating before, so still well above average for a guy who shot, you know, pretty poorly for the night and didn't you know, blow anyone away with his stat line. It's what happens when you play well. Like, they're the numbers you put up when you play well, even if the box score doesn't associate you with playing well. And I think that Towns was, again, really good tonight. And another guy who was good, who I know I'm sure you had down in one of your good things as well, is Anthony Edwards. We spoke about his defense and his versatility earlier on defense, but man, he was good again offensively. The poise, the confidence, it's so obvious when he's out there. He just doesn't seem like a rookie at all. And that's such a big compliment for a guy who was meant to be, you know, the worst number one pick in years and really underdeveloped, and a guy who needed time to get his rhythm and to get the feel of the NBA game. And he just walked onto the court and looks like he's a 10-year vet. He's driving to the rim, he's pushing Royce O'Neal out the way like he's a baby. He's moving Rudy Gobert, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, out the way like he's nothing. The strength, obviously, the athleticism, the touch around the rim, I spoke on that last podcast, is just elite level already. I just feel like he's not going to miss when he gets to the rim. And for the second straight game, I thought he didn't really settle at all, outside of maybe one or two mid-range pull-ups that were kind of ill-advised. I think that he was very disciplined in his shot selection, and that was the big knock coming out of Georgia on him. And I just thought he was awesome. I think he's an X-factor, a true X-factor for this team, and their ceiling rises dramatically if he's able to give this kind of scoring punch and energy punch off the bench. And again, like it was in the Detroit game, he when he comes on, it always seems to be in a little bit of a lull when Minnesota kind of lost a bit of energy and lost a bit of spark. And I don't know if that's coincidence or if it's on purpose by Saunders. I'd say it's probably on purpose, that he just seems to be the guy that gives this team energy. He just comes out and does something straight away. And it's so fun to watch. And I don't know how long it's going to continue, when he's going to go to this player that we all expected him to be, this kind of nervous rookie who doesn't have his feet under him, but right now he looks like a grizzled vet, and it's awesome to watch.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Edwards is he just has zero fear. He had zero fear and all the confidence in the world in himself. You know, we saw two or three different times where he just goes right at Rudy Gobert. I mean, there's not a better rim defender in the NBA than Rudy Gobert. And he just doesn't care, goes right at him, takes him off the bounce.
Bounces off of him,
goes through him, or finishes over him. Just being able to do that is really incredible for a kid that's just 19 years old. I mean, 4 years from now, that kid's going to be 23. If he's getting better game after game and has already showed the poise, the spatial awareness, the shot selection, the ability to playmake and make these different passes.
That pass in transition?
We saw the left hand wraparound pass in transition from him.
I got off my chair just so quick. I almost went through the roof. I got off my chair so quick for that pass, man.
I mean, this is just stuff we don't see from a rookie, let alone a 19-year-old rookie who's 6'5" and 225 pounds. Yeah. I mean, the ceiling for this kid is through the roof. He's got so much that he can build off of and go to, and just the fact that he already understands that he's bigger, faster, and stronger than almost anybody that's going to be defending him is really just great. I think that the more that he can use that strength, quickness, and agility off the dribble to kind of get himself going, I think is going to be just huge for building confidence for him.
Because
it's tough. It's tougher to get into a rhythm if you're just jacking up jumpers. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah. And I think that's what we saw a little bit in the first, you know, couple of preseason games. And it's a testament to him that how quickly that mentality changed. Like, look, the pull-ups can go in after I get myself going. And the way to get myself going is to get to the rim and to put pressure on the rim and get some easy buckets. Because when I get there, these wings can't stop me. These dudes who play the four, you know, Royce O'Neal can play four in the NBA for any team in the league. And there was multiple times where he just, like, babied him. He took him to the rim and he dropped him off underneath it and said, here, I'm going to give you a bucket and you can do whatever you want with that. Like, it's to your point about the confidence and the no fear. It's almost like, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like he doesn't care. And it's not that he doesn't care in a Andrew Wiggins way. It's that he's just going to go out and ball. And he doesn't care that you're all, you know, 10 years older than him or that you've all played 300 more NBA games than him. Like, he's just going to go out there and give you buckets like he has at every level that he's been at. And I love it. I love Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, and the fact that he's said multiple times, too, that the game just isn't that hard.
Yeah.
That basketball just isn't that hard. You have space. You just are smart about it. You know when to drive. You know when to pass. You know when to shoot. The fact that he's not saying it's going to take some time to learn the game or it's going to take time for me to do this or that. The fact that he's just this confident and is really just showing off, you know, his abilities without worrying about how he's going to play or what shots to take or whatever, that he just already knows that and is confident in his ability, is just really special. And I think it's a far cry from what we saw out of Jarrett Culver last year.
Yeah.
But man, if we keep getting this Jarrett Culver. That kind of goes into my next thing too, that Culver and the bench. Was absolutely phenomenal tonight for Minnesota.
Again, because they were good against Detroit as well.
Again, the bench, Wolves bench tonight, 53% from the field on 36 attempts, 8 of 13 from 3, 49 points, 9 assists, and just 2 turnovers.
That's awesome.
Pretty hard to understate how incredible the Wolves have been. The Wolves bench has been, and just the energy that they've infused, how they really brought the Timberwolves back and kept them afloat in the first game against Detroit, and then really just, I mean, broke the game open when they were playing tonight against Utah.
Yeah, and I feel like a broken record because this was the same stuff that I raved about in the post-game pod last game, but like, Culver is a man reborn. He's leading that second unit, and it should be, we all thought it was going to be Rubio or maybe Edwards, and they're both playing pretty well, but it's Culver who's the glue there. He's the heart and soul of that bench unit, and he was everywhere again. He was 5 of 7 from the field, hit all 3 of his triples like we spoke about. I thought he was really good on the glass on both ends. He had a few really timely offensive rebounds. One was off his own miss, and then another where he kind of just swooped in and created another possession, and Minnesota ended up scoring on that possession. And then just making things really uncomfortable for the Jazz's ball handlers on defense. I'm the first one to eat crow here. And, you know, I couldn't see this kind of rise coming from Culver, and I certainly didn't see it coming 2 games into the season and the preseason as well, but just the rise coming straight away in his sophomore year. There could be regression coming. I hope there's not, but right now it's so encouraging for JC. And we were on, you know, this podcast, 3-4 weeks ago, saying that maybe he should start in the G League, or, you know, you got to move him at the first chance possible to open up space for the other wings, open up minutes for them. And now it's, you know, I feel stupid saying that because he's an integral part of this team and a really integral part of the bench.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that he's able to, I mean, that he just, it's so apparent how much more confidence he has this year than last.
Yeah.
Is just incredible. I just am speechless. I'm sitting here, the motor, my brain is just going too fast for my mouth to say enough positive things about Jarrett Culver.
Yeah.
he multiple times. I think he had a few offensive rebounds tonight that were really big. I want to say he had two or three offensive rebounds
tonight.
Yeah,
that's what I was just saying. Those two that I was just talking about, they were huge.
One was a kick out to Russell for a wide open three that he missed. Yeah. But another one he dumped off to Kat for a bucket, which was big.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just being able to do that, those little things make such a huge difference. And especially when you have a lead and you're trying to preserve it, are incredible. I've used that word again and again and again, but man, I like you said, I couldn't be happier to eat crow about Jarrett Culver and just move forward, almost expecting Jarrett Culver to continue to play very well. Whereas last year, I think whenever Jarrett Culver had a good game, we always just kind of were like, okay, Jarrett, like, let's see you do it again. But now that he's legitimately had five very good games in a row now, just it is going to be such a huge, huge thing for the Wolves. And I tweeted this out earlier, and I just want to go back to it before we kind of move on here, just about how deep the Timberwolves are.
Yeah, it's unheard of.
So I think the Timberwolves, these are the teams that I can say right now for sure the Timberwolves are deeper than. I think the Timberwolves are deeper than Golden State, Memphis.
Definitely. Yeah.
San Antonio.
Yeah.
Sacramento.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City.
Well,
Denver.
Yeah.
New Orleans and Houston. So that right there is eight teams. So
and all the teams that you're likely battling for that playoff spot, or at least the play-in
and
spot.
And if you're I think good benches can go a long way in determining whether or not you make the playoffs, just because I think depth matters a lot more in the regular season than it does in the playoffs. But man, oh man, if the Timberwolves can be better than those eight teams right there, I mean, you're looking at a seven seed.
Yeah.
At worst.
And that's the thing is all the, obviously it's early. I want to, put that out there before I make this point, and that anything can happen, especially with these guys who we're considering really strong depth pieces. Like, we don't know if Culver's going to keep this up or if Anthony Edwards is going to be a rookie of the year type of player. But, like, if they keep this up, then all of these predictions that we made, that everyone made before the season, they have to be altered, because we expected Culver to be bad. We expected Anthony Edwards to be that, the rookie who
starts slowly.
Yeah, starts slowly and who has the occasional big game and who's awful, awful on defense, and, you can't have good defensive possessions when he's out there, but that's not the case right now. And if these guys continue like this, the Minnesota have legitimate depth, and legitimate depth wins you games. I think it's a great point that they win you more games in the regular season, because in the playoffs, it's your best seven players are what matters, not how good your 10 players are. But the Minnesota Timberwolves aren't worrying about the playoffs right now. They're worrying about trying to get there to begin with, and then they can figure it out from there. But Culver and Edwards, I think, are just huge bonuses right now and exceeding even my wildest expectations coming into the season.
Yeah, and I understand everybody wanting to pump the brakes, but there's legitimately zero reason to believe that Jarrett Culver is not going to play with this confidence moving forward, and there's zero reason to believe that Anthony Edwards can't keep up what he's doing. You know, if Anthony Edwards was shooting, 70% from three or something, and most of his like improvements were perimeter oriented, or perimeter shooting oriented, I think that this would be a much different conversation. But the fact that he's just been getting to the rim at will and making really smart plays, I think that's really encouraging. And just the way that he and Culver are playing, I think, is so easy for them to replicate, just because it's so built off of confidence. And even if they're not making shots, both of them have still been very effective. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes complete. And that's like what we were saying with Kat. Like, if you can play well without shooting 70% and scoring 30 points on 10 shots, like, that's how you win games, because you're not going to do that every night. But if you can impact the game while, Anthony Edwards is, I think, shot under 50% from the field in both games, and it's felt like he was one of the best players on the court both games. So, you know, that's what I expect from Edwards going forward, and that's not what I expected going into the season. And Culver's the same. I expected him to be a guy who was fighting for minutes, and probably the guy who was in Hernan Gomez's situation right now, where, you know, a couple of bad games see him pretty much eliminated from the rotation. But instead, he was the first guy off the bench tonight. Like, he was the last guy off the bench in the first game, and he was the first guy off the bench this game to come in and to check Donovan Mitchell. Like, there's responsibility heaped onto him right now. And Anthony Edwards shot 8 of 12, sorry. So he did shoot well over 50% tonight. But like you said, that's from getting to the rim. And I just think that these two playing well is such a huge boon for this team. It's unreal, and my expectations for the team have definitely gone up a notch or two if they can keep playing like this.
100%, man. I'm right there with you. And, you know, tomorrow's going to be, or today, depending on if people are listening to this, is going to be a great test for the Timberwolves against the Lakers. Anthony Davis is questionable with an ankle and calf injury. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play. Just because I think he's kind of gotten hit in the back of the leg and rolled his ankle a couple of different times in their first two games.
And it's still the Timberwolves. Like, if they're looking at the schedule, they're thinking, well, it's the Timberwolves. Like, we should be able to beat the Timberwolves with LeBron James, even without AD. So it seems pretty likely he doesn't play.
Yeah, and if he doesn't play, the Timberwolves, there is no reason why the Timberwolves can't win that game.
Yep.
You know, Timberwolves might struggle a little bit with Montrezl Harrell, or Naz Reid might. But Naz Reid is a big physical dude who can get in front of him. And if AD's out, I think it takes a lot of pressure off the Timberwolves to, you know, find somebody to guard him. I think Josh Okogie would probably be the guy that you try and have guard him, maybe.
Yeah.
If you don't want to put Cat on him. But man, oh man, if Anthony Davis doesn't play and the Timberwolves somehow walk out of that stretch with a 3-0 record, and then who do they play after that? And then I think they play
Clippers
on Tuesday. So if they walk out of that 3-1,
yeah, well, that's if you beat Lakers, you can allow yourself that slip up against the Clippers, and you're still on cloud nine.
And then you come down and you play the Timberwolves, or you play the Wizards at home on Friday, which I will be in attendance for, which will be a lot of fun.
Big time.
On Friday. And then you have a home and home with the Nuggets.
They always play a good game. It's always a good game between the Wolves and Nuggets.
With how poor that Nuggets, I don't know if you've watched the Nuggets, but I've gotten a chance to watch both of the Nuggets games so far. That bench is terrible.
And they aren't defending at all at the moment. No. Like, they've always been pretty bad, but they've been terrible.
And if Jamal Murray isn't on, that team is going to... If one of Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. is not on, that team is, I think, could struggle to win games.
So we're predicting 72-0 pretty much at this point.
Yeah, I just think so. I just want to kind of finish this thought. So if they end up on this road trip 3-1 or even 2-2, and then I think that they'd beat the Wizards. I don't think that they, you know, with Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie, I think you can slow down. I think you can slow down Russ and Beal enough to a point where you force other guys to beat you. So let's pencil them in at 3-2 after those games. I think that they'll beat the Nuggets twice. I really do. I think that if you win 2 out of 3 in that stretch against the Nuggets and Blazers, so then what does that put you at? That puts you at 5-2.
And that's the stretch. It's at about the, I don't know if we're up
or
to
5-3. That puts you at 5-3, and then you have a home and home with the Spurs and a home and home with the Grizzlies, and then the Hawks and the Magic. I think the Timberwolves could very legitimately start like 7-3 or 8-3.
Yeah, that'd be huge, because it's that stretch at the Spurs, like starts at that Spurs game, where there's a very winnable 10-game stretch in there. And then you've almost played 20 games in a shortened season, and you're kind of, like, obviously there's a long way to go, but if you get off to a start where you're well above 500 in the first, you know, 18, 20 games, like, there's a real chance that's just, you know, you now, that you can just win most games.
I'll rifle it off. And this is why I think the Timberwolves have a legitimate case to make the playoffs here already. So if it, so from the Spurs, okay, starting with the Spurs on Saturday, January 9th, you have two against the Spurs, two against the Grizzlies, two against the Hawks, one against the Magic, Pelicans, two against the Warriors, one against the 76ers, and then two against the Cavs, two against the Thunder, and one against the Spurs.
Yeah.
So that's a stretch of that's a stretch of 15 games. 15 games where the Timberwolves could very feasibly win 12 of those games.
Yeah. Yeah. And by that, if you go through this stretch that we're on right now, the start of the season stretch, and you come out of it, you know, 5-3 or 5-2, like you just said, and then you go 12-3, like it probably doesn't happen because it's the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you know we are accustomed to losing. But like at that point, where like what are you 20-5 or something? Like that's you're a playoff team then. If you're 20-5 start of the season, you're a playoff team, and that's the bottom line.
But, yeah, and I don't think they start that, obviously. I think they probably go in that 10-game stretch, like 9-6 or 10-5. But yeah, even starting out this season, even starting out this season like 12-7 or 12-6 or something like that, still gives the Timberwolves a lot of games to play with moving forward in a pretty big cushion that I think is going to be big time for them if they can kind of catch any type of rhythm. And just continue to have this confidence and know that the way that they play is going to be successful.
Yeah, I completely agree. Have you got any more good things you want to finish off on before we get out of here?
I think that we pretty much covered everything that I wanted to touch on. The only thing I think that the two other things that I wanted to mention was I think Naz Reid is holding up very well. At the backup five spot, I really hope that he's okay and that shoulder of his is okay. But he's had some flashes of some really, really solid defense against, you know, tonight he had a great possession against Donovan Mitchell. It ended in a Mitchell and one, but that wasn't his fault whatsoever. And if he can kind of continue to protect the rim the way he has been and make some threes, you know, he made two threes tonight. That's going to be big. And then, D'Lo just obviously being a big time shot maker in the fourth quarter is really special. The fact that we saw Cat completely take over the first game, and then we saw D'Lo completely take over the last 5 minutes tonight. You know, he had 9 points in the last 5 minutes tonight is awesome. And then my last quick header, I saw that Dane Moore tweeted this out, but, the Timberwolves started defending the pick and roll a little bit differently tonight than they had before. So they had three guys defending the pick and roll where they'd have the weak side help guy come step up and have someone on the back end fill in that strong side corner.
Yeah, because usually they stay home in the corners. And kind of leave it as a two man coverage, which I know you and Dane talked about on his pod the other day, which I thought was really kind of eye-opening. And then you're right, tonight they did bring that helper in, and I think you need that, especially when they're D'Lo Towns pick and rolls. The helper means a lot, and obviously he has a lot of responsibility to get back to the corner and to cover up a lot of space, but you need to help Towns. I don't think you can leave him and Russell on an island for too many possessions.
Yeah, 100%. And
yeah, I was just going to say that I thought your other point was that maybe we sold D'Lo a little bit short in this podcast because we didn't really speak about him that much, but like again, just huge nuts. Like that man just has huge nuts. He hits big shots. There was the stretch where Towns was out with the injury and getting checked out, and he hit three leaning, fading mid-range jumpers that kind of kept Minnesota afloat because you could feel the dread, you know, in the air as soon as Towns went out, where it was like not only is Towns pretty injured here, but Minnesota are also about to blow this game in 3 minutes, you know, and that's what we're used to when Towns isn't on the floor, and that's why Gerson Rosas went and got another bucket getter, another guy who can carry an offense for stretches, because he in that small little window where Towns was off, he won him that game just by being an offensive fulcrum and someone who can run an offense through when Towns isn't out there.
100%, and you know, I think the D'Lo that we saw down the stretch of that one game where he cooked us for 50 last year, where he just kept making big shot after big shot. To be able to have that guy in our uniform is just the best. And the fact that he had no fear and just went right to work once Cat left is something that's really encouraging. And the fact that he knows that Carl's the guy, and last game they played through him, and today they went through D'Lo is awesome.
That's huge, because he's always been since he kind of had his breakout in Brooklyn, he's always been that guy who's the first option, and he's got a lot of flack for not being a good enough first option, I guess, or being kind of inefficient and not getting to the rim enough. And like, it's so encouraging to see that he just accepted his role as the second best player on this team, and he's willing to step up and be the best player when he has to. Like, that's, I love the buy-in from D'Lo so far.
Yeah, it was the way he started and the way he finished. He took over at the start of the game and took over at the end of the game. And when he set the tone and kind of confirmed the tone later on, I think that's just the sign of a big time player and a big time shot maker. I'm just glad D'Lo's on our team. And one last note that I want to make, I just saw a tweet here from Jace Frederick, who's the Timberwolves writer for the Pioneer Press, and Cat's late game. Excuse me, Cat's post-game comments here about his wrist. It's pretty sore, pretty sore. I really came back. I couldn't catch or anything. So I was really just there more just to be a distraction on the court. I was there if my team needed me. I didn't want to quit the game, end quote. And then he continued on saying, quote, I don't want to speak ahead. We'll get further testing. I'm going to just stay positive. It's only right. I hurt my wrist in 2020. Shit just goes sideways for me all the time. Keep it positive, end quote. So that doesn't sound too encouraging. It sounds kind of similar to what happened last year with Cat, but hopefully he's able to ice up and be ready to go for tomorrow.
Yeah, well, there's no point speculating too much. Like he said, I guess you just wait for these tests. I was a little bit worried because I know, like last season he did play multiple games, I think, after hurting the wrist and then was ruled out as the pain kept getting worse. So hoping for the best for Towns, that would be a pretty big blow to all the optimism that we've been chatting about now. But I think that, we'll leave it at that. I think tonight was a good night. I don't want to sour it too much with the Towns injury worries. So as usual, Jack, you killed it here tonight. Kill it on Twitter. Go follow him on Twitter at JRBorman13. And thanks for always being available for a show, dude.
Absolutely, man. It's always a good time to be with you, especially after a big win link tonight. And you're the best, man. I mean that. And I always appreciate the time.
Thanks, dude. Everyone else, like, rate, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And I'll try and get another show out tomorrow after the Lakers game, hopefully after another win.